Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we have an emotional story about foster care. A Prince George's County Council member has written a book about his difficult earliest years and how foster care eventually impacted his life and led him to public service. This is National Foster Care Month, and we are also answering questions about the process for those who are considering becoming foster parents. My guests are Prince George's County District 9 Councilmember Sydney Harrison and Darquita Fletcher. She is Deputy Assistant Director of Child, Adult, and Family Services with the Prince George's County Department of Social Services. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can use the hashtag WHURFM. Thank you both for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Harold.
Thank you for having us.
I want to start with you, Councilman Member Harrison, because, you know, a lot of times we will hear people, successful people, high-profile people, mm-hmm. and they will say, well, I was a foster care child, but now look at me. Why does foster care seem to get such a bad name?
Well, let me just, I can only speak from, you know, my situation. And anytime when we're talking about our children, every child in this world has immense purpose. They are special. They have their creativity matters, their purpose matters, their emotion matters, and their feelings matters. And as adults, it's our job to complement our children's strengths and their gifts and their abilities. We're supposed to complement those and bring the best out of our children. And the only way that we can do that is through the gift of love.
And so that's how you identify with the foster care system.
Yes.
And I think that's a really important point, because, as I said, some people say, well, I was a foster care kid, but it's like started at the bottom. Now I'm here.
Right.
When, you know, the reality is some of those stories are, they may be high profile, mm-hmm. but they do not really define the lion's share of those involved in the system, wherever they happen to be. You know, your thoughts about that?
Well, I do agree with that. Young people who experience foster care really do have a tremendous story. And going through the foster care system, they will experience they could experience trauma or different things, different struggles. So I think that when people say, well, you know, I was in foster care and now I'm here, it really talks about, you know, some of the struggles that they've been through, and they have pushed through that and succeeded in life.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to imagine that a lot of those struggles, for the most part, happen before they got to foster care, which is why they end up there.
Right.
Councilmember Harrison, you do have a rather difficult story. Give me the kind of the Cliff Notes version, because it really started even before birth.
So back in 1974, I was a product of a vicious, brutal rape by a teenage. My birth mother was a teenage runaway living in the streets in North Carolina. While hitchhiking, she was raped by two men and left in the field, knocked unconscious. From that, her home was a bus station where she stayed at and she lived at for many months. And she met another individual coming home from the war that she confided in. And when you're young and you're living in the streets, you can be consumed by the dangerous elements of the world. And she didn't know this person, and that person began to sex traffic her in the streets to feed his drug addiction that he had. And so the whole time that she was pregnant, she was beaten, abused, mentally abused, emotionally abused, physically abused in every aspect that you can think of. When I was born, I weighed 2 pounds, 1 ounce. I had gangrene in my intestines. I had a herniated bowel, needed a blood transfusion. And my nervous system was severely hampered. I had less than a 10% chance of survival. And I was abandoned at birth at the hospital. So the first 3 months of my life, I actually lived in Children's Hospital in the NICU unit, and from there I was entrusted into the foster care system, where my parents, which back then they entered into the pre-adoptive foster care program as foster parents. They had 3 kids already, 3 of their biological children, 27 years old, high school sweethearts, been married for at least 10 years at that point. Well, 9 years at that point. And then they decided to bring another child into their home. I was supposed to stay there for 6 months, ended up staying there for 1.5 years. Then the Department of Social Services came, and they were like, they came to try to take me away, and there's a reason for that. Because at that time, cross-racial adoptions did not happen very often. Okay, mm-hmm. We're talking about early 70s. And my family, my foster parents at the time, were Caucasian. I'm Italian and African American. And so they thought it was in the best interest of the child to place me in a family of color. But my mom was like, look, this is my baby. I'm going to fight for him. And so she went through a 3-year legal battle to adopt me. And she eventually won. And I must say this, that it is love that saved my life.
Why do you say that?
Because just imagine a world where a child doesn't experience love. Just imagine a world where a child doesn't have the opportunity to have security around them, where they can grow, where they can be nourished, where they can be, you know, talk about their dreams. You know, just imagine a world where that is not possible. And I'm not saying that the foster care system, that's what all foster care kids experience. But what foster care does do, and the parents that are in foster care, they have the ability to provide love. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm saying. Love is that life's greatest changing agent. And if it wasn't for the love that was shown to me, I don't know if I could be the man that I am today. So I owe a lot of my gratitude to the foster care system. And my appreciation, but not only that, to the Harrison family that never really gave up on me. And I had a host of issues. Like, you know, there's always a story for each child that comes through. And there's always a situation why the child is actually in foster care. Knowing that security is most important, where a child can be placed in a forever home in a loving and a nourishing and stable environment, I think that's the fundamental right of every child. Ms. Fletcher, what do you think?
I definitely agree with you, and that's why we invest so much time and energy and training into our foster parents, because it's really important for our young people who are coming into foster care to have a forever family, to have a stable home, even if it's only going to be temporary, because of course our young people entering foster care, our first goal is to reunify them with their families. So even in that short amount of time, it's really important for families to accept a young person in a home and love them like it was their children.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about foster care. This is National Foster Care Month, and we're also hearing a story from Prince George's County's District 9 Council Member Sidney Harrison, who was in the foster care system long before he became an elected official. We're also talking to Darquita Fletcher, Deputy Assistant Director, that is, of Child, Adult, and Family Services with Prince George's County's Department of Social Services. If you have a question or a comment about the foster care system, being a foster care parent. Again, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ms. Fletcher, you mentioned Forever Family. That is a term I'm not familiar with. What is Forever Family?
So when we say Forever Family, so when young people come into foster care, they usually either have a goal of reunification, which means return back to their real, return back to their family, adoption, or custody and guardianship, or if they're older, they will leave the foster care system and live on their own. But when we talk about Forever Family, we're talking about our young people who, our children, who have a goal of adoption or custody and guardianship, and we really want them to have that that family forever. So if our their own family they're not able to have their children return safely to their home, then we want to make sure we have families that will embrace that child and love that child forever. So when we talk about Forever Family, that's what that means.
What is the number one thing that you want a potential foster parent to know before they enter into the system?
I think the most important thing that the foster parents need to know is that they will be provided. They will have support, right, with the department. So when foster parents become licensed, they receive their a social worker to work with them to sometimes the vet when they are having a difficult time with a young person. We always have annual events to support and celebrate our foster parents. We have galas, we have support groups, we have continuous training. So one thing that is important, because sometimes people think like, oh, you know, if I become a foster parent, will it be stressful and things like that? But it's really important for them to know that we are there to support them and guide them every step of the way.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about National Foster Care Month and being a foster care parent. Let me go to Hassan. Hassan calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Hassan. What's on your mind?
How's everybody?
Doing just fine.
I just wanted to share my experience with foster care. I once worked for an agency, a residential program, and I quit my job and returned a year later to petition to become a foster parent for two young men. Eventually, I never wanted to get rid of the young men because I was worried about where they were going to go, who was going to cook dinner for them every night, who was going to help with the homework. So I ended up adopting the two young men until... One recently moved out, and the ages are now 24 and 26, and I've had them since the age of 12 and 14. So I had a wonderful experience with foster care, but it is important to make sure that a foster child has stability and not be bounced around from place to place, because it has an everlasting effect on their future if they feel that they don't have a basic foundation.
I think that's a really, really good point, Hassan. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Councilmember Harrison, your thoughts about what he just shared with us.
I totally agree. First and foremost, I just want to commend him. I consider him to be an angel and a hero.
Yes.
But the stability part is very, very important. All children need consistency, and they need direction as well. And so that stability is a major piece, because once that child gets the consistency and the stability, they're able to actually think about what they want to do for their life. So a lot of the times the foster care kids, they could be so worried about where they're going to go next. They could be worried about what home or what bed am I going to sleep in next. So the concept of thinking could be that they're in survival mode right now. So the stability part creates that sense of security, which can create a longevity where they can build their dreams upon that solid foundation of stability.
And I would imagine that kind of emotional stress can really do a number on a child, no matter what their age is, mm-hmm. if they don't know where they may be 1 year to the next or 1 month to the next.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and it's also the fear of rejection. So if you have a young person maybe moving from home to home, and they encounter a family who loves them, who says, okay, we embrace you, you're a part of the family, and they may look at the family and say, wait a minute, yeah, okay, no, you're just not going to do this for me. And so they also have that fear of rejection. So it's really important for our families to show them that they're going to be there and they're going to be consistent, even when they're acting like a typical teenager, right? Mm-hmm. We were all teenagers at one time, to really just show them, no matter what goes on in your life, we're going to be there for you.
Before I take a break, is there a website or some information you can share quickly for our listeners at home? Where do they need to go to find out more information about foster care?
They can go to the Prince George's County website at princegeorgescountymd.gov/DSS.
One more time, please.
princegeorgescountymd.gov/DSS.
We will, of course, have that information posted on our website tonight after 9 o'clock on WHUR.com. Andrea calling from Silver Spring. Gloria calling from Clinton, Maryland. We're going to talk to you next. Please do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. And we're going to take your phone calls. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We continue our conversation on Sirius XM, Channel 141 in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is National Foster Care Month, and we are talking about the many complex issues surrounding foster care. My guests are Prince George's County District 9 Council Member Sydney Harrison. He is a former foster care child, and also Darquita Fletcher, Deputy Assistant Director of Child, Adult, and Family Services with the Prince George's County Department of Social Services. If you have a comment or if you have a question about foster care, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me go back to the phone lines. Andrea calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for calling, Andrea. What's on your mind?
Yes, I was just wanting to call in to the panelists. I am a product of foster care. I was raised in Oklahoma originally. We had over 300 children in and out of our foster home. My adopted parents did adopt five of us. In that time, it was a lot of physical, emotional abuse. She would lock children in the basement, like those stereotypical scary stories that always occurred with a lot of the foster children, along with the adopted children in the household. As I grew up, I always kind of wondered what happened to those children, where they were coming into this home to seek refuge, and as Mr. Harrison said, love as well, but they got a lot of additional abuse. So now I go into the communities and work with various community schools in the D.C. area and do empowerment programs, because of my experience and seeing a lot of brokenness that can occur in the adoptive and foster home. So my question to the panelists is, I know you work with different foster parents and adopted parents, but do you do any type of follow-up programs just to check on the well-being of the children or, you know, the individuals that have adopted these children?
Go right ahead, Ms. Fletcher.
Yes, thank you. First of all, I want to just thank you for your passion and continue to work with our young people in the community. But yes, we do. We, as I stated before, our foster parents have their own social workers, and they are required to visit the home to do a thorough check of the home. And our foster care social workers are required to visit the youth in the homes once a month. And a lot of the times we visit them more than once a month. So they actually sit down and meet with the foster parent or the relative where the child is placed, and they check on the child's well-being and safety. So that definitely we always make sure that our children are safe in the home.
When you were in foster care?
You know, the one thing that I wanted Ms. Fletcher to touch on, too, you also have the CASA workers, the court-appointed special advocates that work on behalf for the child's best interest, and they work with the Department of Social Services as well. I did not necessarily have that. We just had the Department of Social Services because CASA wasn't, it really didn't form until 1978. And I was born, I mean, I was adopted July 14th, 1978. So I didn't get to experience that. But that is a great point that your caller has made. And, you know, I'm going to yield the floor to Ms. Fletcher on that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. So, definitely, we want to. We always try to make sure, you know, at 100% that our children are safe when they're in the homes, whether it be with a relative. Because even if they are placed with a relative, but they're in our foster care system, we still go out and visit and check for the safety and the well-being of the child in the home.
How do you weed out the bad apples, the bad foster care parents, and what do you look for?
So when, of course, when a when someone is interested in becoming a foster parent, they will attend our info session. We have a foster parent recruiter, Lisa Robinson. I kind of call her a pit bull because she really, during the info sessions, and all of our foster parents have to do a thorough background check, federal, FBI, a state background check, criminal. So we vet our foster parents. We do the background check. They go through a 27-hour course, foster parent course, where they learn about becoming a parent, grief and loss, and all of these skills they would need to take care of children. But the other thing is, during these classes, our foster parent recruiter is like always doing an assessment of the families, making sure that they're appropriate, making sure that, you know, she hones in on if this family is going to be a good family or a good fit for us. Because even though we definitely want foster parents, we want the right foster parents for our children. Right. And so even after they're done with the classes, we have a unit that goes out to the home and they meet with the potential foster parents. They complete a home study. They have to have their homes inspected. We collect references. We call the references. So there is an extensive process, and we actually have social workers who meet with the potential resource parents to vet them.
And Harold, I did experience that. I mean, of course, my parents had to go through that same process as well. What's added to it, as you know now, is the court-appointed special advocates. While they're going through the process, that there are CASA workers that work on behalf with the behalf of on the best interest of the children, but they also work with the Department of Social Services as well to make sure that that interest of that child is met.
Yes.
Andrea, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Gloria calling from Clinton. Thanks for calling, Gloria. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Harold. Thank you for having this topic since, you know, May is National Foster Care Month. Council Member Harrison, I am a District 9 resident, and I truly appreciate you for sharing your story publicly and encouraging love. We see this in you each day, so thank you. My question is for Ms. Fletcher. Can you share with me, I grew up in a home with my father, raised by my father, who was my biological father, but foster parent to a number of children. But I'm wondering now, are there regulations in place where siblings are not separated, or is there a priority so as to not separate siblings when they're entering the foster care system? And what's happening around the sibling situation? I know it's important for them to kind of stay together to at least maintain some connectivity to family.
That's an excellent question.
Absolutely. So the department makes every effort to ensure that children are placed with their siblings. And at any time, and maintain, of course, the family relationships. They also have family visits. So at any time where we have a very large sibling group, which we do have sometimes, and we have to put them in separate foster homes, we make sure we don't put them in multiple foster homes, we make sure our parents can have at least two or three of the children. And what we do is we have our foster parents do family visits, sibling visits with the children so that they will continue to keep that family connection.
That has to be emotionally difficult, particularly if you're talking about a family of, you know, a sibling group of four or five children, two here, three there, two here, two there. And is that a difficult thing to coordinate?
It could be at times. I think it's difficult when we have larger family sibling groups, like if we have a sibling group of five or six, or, you know, we've had sibling groups of eight. So when the number becomes really large, it does become difficult because, of course, when we can't have a home with a licensed home with eight children in it or even five children in it. But we try to make an effort to make sure that if they are placed in different homes, that they continue to see each other.
Well, because that brings me to another question then. And we've talked about this issue for many, many years. And we've had a chance to speak to foster parents that have been extremely successful. But they may bring a foster child into a home where there are already children that were originally part of the family, not adopted, they were birth children. So if you have, for example, and I'm just kind of throwing this out because I don't know, let's say you have a family of five and a two-parent household, what will determine whether or not, if they pass everything else, that they would be allowed to add a sixth child? Is that a determining factor? There are already seven folks in the house. Can they have eight? You know, how does that work?
Yes, that is a determining factor because when our social workers go in the home and do the assessment, we want to make sure, okay, you have your family of five, but are you capable of handling an additional child? So if we do have if the family have five children, they may be able to still provide a loving and stable environment. But at that moment, we may not license them for two or three kids. We may say, you know, and it's at our discretion. We may say, okay, so we'll license you for one child and we'll monitor the home and see how it works out. And we'll go from there.
Wow, that is interesting. Go ahead.
And you know, Ms. Fletcher, I really want you to touch, if you could let the audience know, of how many actually kids we have in foster care nationally, and how many kids that do we have in Prince George's County that are in the foster care, and how many of them are aging out, since we're talking about foster care.
And before we do that, first of all, I want to thank Gloria because that is part of one of the questions I was going to ask, but he's trying to take my job. And I want to go to Twanda because she's been holding, and I want to make sure that she gets her question in. Twanda, go right ahead, please.
Hi. My name's LaWanda.
Okay.
And my question is simply for the older children that are aging out. With the foster care parents and the children that are aging out, do you provide assistance to help resource those children to go to college?
Yes, we do. The state has a Maryland tuition waiver program where they will pay for a young person to go to college for up to 10 years or until they obtain their bachelor's degree. At the Department of Social Services, we also have a Ready by 21 program. We are required by the state to provide independent living skills for our young people who are aging out of foster care. That's actually one of my passions as well, to make sure that young people successfully transition out of foster care, because everyone knows at 21, you're really not ready to even leave your own parents' house, right? And so,
speak for yourself.
My kids still ask me for money in their 20s.
Well, there's so, that. That brings me to my next point. So, what happens when a child ages out? So, do they age? They age out at 21.
Yes.
So then. And this may get into the very nuances. If you are in a foster care situation And on your 21st birthday, if you've not been adopted, do you have to leave that household, or is there a process by which the foster care parents can say, well, you can stay, but do they then at 21 lose the benefits, the support? How does that work?
So when a young person ages out of foster care, of course, if the foster parent wants to, has that connection, right? We always encourage adult connections with our young people. But what we do is we prepare them even at an early age. So at the department, we have a Ready by 21 unit, and we have an education coordinator, we have an employment coordinator, we have a housing coordinator, we have someone who provides independent living skills. So we're teaching them about cooking and cleaning and household management and paying rent. And some of our young people over the age of 18, because we have a program called CELA, which is semi-independent living arrangement, where if they are working, they're going to school full-time, we actually pay them a monthly stipend. So instead of them living with a foster parent, if we feel that they are prepared and ready to live on their own, some of our young people find their own apartments, they're working, we pay them a stipend, and we help them to prepare them to live on their own. So what we think about is, if they're living on their own at 18, right, they still have up until they're 21. So if they mess up, if they forget they can't pay a month's rent or something happens, we are always there to support them. And it gives them that experience of living on their own before they turn 21 and they leave the foster care system and have that support. We even at the department, we even have an aftercare worker where our young people are supported when they leave foster care. And we have an apartment program where we see them up to 18 months after they leave foster care. So the department has really invested in the need to provide support when the young people age out of foster care.
Councilmember Harrison, you did meet your birth mother.
Yes, sir.
What was that like?
It was a very humbling experience, because for all the years I had my own interpretation, what I thought and how I thought it. And I was stuck on what I felt. But when I was able to meet her as a grown man, I was able to see the other side. And the minute I met her, it was less about me and more about her.
How did that come about?
Through a 12-year search for looking for her, and went through the process as well as getting the seal removed from my adoption file. Going through the judicial process, and then the Department of Social Services contacting her many years later and saying that your birth son wanted to meet you.
So what was that first moment like? Did you talk to her on the phone at first? How did it happen?
Well, my situation's a little bit different. And the reason why is because when we were on the phone, it was a telephone call conversation, and I would think the first hour she was just crying. Mm-hmm. She couldn't believe that she was talking to me on the other side of the phone. And there was just a lot of apologizing for what had transpired, and that she did not know if I was dead or alive, because when she left me, I was in dire straits. But one of the most honest comments that she said is, if you were what love is, I did not want anything to do with you, because love doesn't do what happened to me. And so what I realized at that moment, it was not about me. It was more about her. And I needed to show her that something positive could happen from such a traumatic and negative experience. And so I found myself just really trying to understand what her walk was all those years, not knowing what happened to this child, the compassionate side of, she didn't have the support system. She didn't have the resources. She definitely didn't have the education as well, because she was in survival mode. And from there on, transpired from relationship to relationship, a lot of abuse, domestic violence, that she encountered throughout her life, along with substance abuse. But I'm proud to say now that the relationship that we have since I met her, she has really done very well for herself. She has stability in her life. She's in a stable relationship, and she has been clean for the last 14 years. Mm. And for that, I'm forever proud. But yes. What's interesting is that I was her only child, and now, after all these years, she was able to foster and eventually adopt a child as well. And adoption's nothing unfamiliar with my family, because my father was adopted as well. And so I always say that, you know, if you have love in your heart for a child, unconditional love, a love that where you're meeting someone that you know nothing about, but at the end of the day, that love that you too experience as a parent and as a child, that type of love is the type of love that will help save that child's life.
When you won election to the county council, what kind of conversations did you have with her during your campaign and after you won? What was that like?
Well, the way I entered into public service was holistic. It was organic. So all my experiences that I've experienced in life, those are the things or the challenges and my setbacks and my failures that I've had in life. Those are the things that I fight for. Those are the things that I'm very passionate for. What's interesting about this story, though, Harold, is prior to me being before I was elected to the county council, I was actually elected to the clerk of the circuit court for Prince George's mm-hmm. County. And I served in the same courthouse that I was adopted in. And so anyone that was going through the adoption process in Prince George's County, it was my signature that went on their adoption decrees. And so all these things that I've gone through in life have been organic. They've been holistic. And I know I just said that. But the conversations that she's had with me, even my parents that adopted me, is that they understand that there's a message behind why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I can say that just as much as where I am in life has a lot to do with my birth mother, but just as much as where I am in life has to do with the foster care and the adoption system.
Was there a particular moment when you were, in the system in this loving foster care situation, I won't call it the system, that you would say was really pivotal in getting you to where you are now? Was there a conversation? Was there a watershed moment? Was there an aha time for you?
There was one aha moment. My mother that was adopting me, which was my foster parent at the mm-hmm. time, was going through the process of adopting me, but the Department of Social Services at that time was going to put me in another family.
Right.
And my mother told me that she dressed me up one day, and I had these little Oshkosh overalls on, and my feet can't touch the floor, and I'm swinging my feet, and they're tapping each up my feet. And she thought that was the last time she was going to see me. Mm-hmm. And she said that she was so scared because she knew once I left, that it would probably be hard to get me back. And every time that she was getting money from the Department of Social Services, she was paying for her attorney to keep on fighting for me to actually be adopted. So there was no benefit for her other than that she wanted to give a child love that needed so desperately. And so every year, Harold, on December 17th, me and my mother and my family, we have a celebration because that's the day I came home. I was her Christmas present, and she tells me that Department of Social Services had a little note attached to me and said, "Have fun with this beautiful baby." And she's never forgotten that, and she still has the note. So those are the type of situations and moments in life that make it real. And I've had the opportunity to go all across the world spreading awareness for orphans in Africa and a pediatric aid for the fight against AIDS. I've had the opportunity to serve and do community work with the Department of Social Services. And I'm a firm believer that it is the fundamental right that every child deserves to be raised in a loving, nourishing, and stable environment. And that's why I know when love is a part of, is the main ingredient of a child's life, that child's going to succeed, Harold.
You know, Ms. Fletcher, I often seen over the years, prospective parents for one reason or another are unable to have children of their own, to conceive for whatever reason, and they literally travel the world to adopt. What is your message to those who are looking for adoptive children on the other side of the world when there are so many children in the foster care system?
Come to Prince George's County DSS. Become a resource parent.
Give you a call, right?
Yeah, give us a call, please. Right.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. We do have, we do have parents that come to adopt children, and they may not can have children of their own. So definitely we embrace those families as well. But I really want to also place a strong emphasis on our young adults, right? So we have probably close to 60% of our children. We have a little bit over 500 children in foster care in Prince George's County. And close to 60% of those children are between the ages of 13 to 20. You know, they emancipate at 21. And our teenagers need love, too. They need those stable families. You know, they need someone to fight for them and continue to love them and make them feel affirmed and safe. And I would say and most people, when they want to adopt, they think about adopting a child, a young baby. But I would definitely say to the community that we need you to take in our young people to our teenagers, because they really need that love and support and that stability in their lives as well.
How do those prospective foster parents deal with the birth families that, while they may not be legally eligible to raise those children because of drug abuse or other kinds of difficult situations, how do you deal with that if you have a stable situation, but the mother, the birth mother, or the birth father is always kind of out there? That also has to be a very a tenuous situation.
Of course. I think that when we have families who become, who take in our children into their homes, of course, like I said, our first goal is reunification. So you may have a child in your home. You love them, you take care of them, and then their families may, you know, they are ready to have their child back home. And it's difficult for the foster parent. You know, we do have support and training on grief and loss around that specific topic. Because you have that person, your child in your home, and you nurture them, and then you have to return them back to the biological family. But we also do have our resource families and biological families of the children who work. They do work together, right? And sometimes they figure out how to co-parent together. They have a relationship. Sometimes we have young people who go back to their relatives, and they stay connected to their foster parents, and their foster parents will, their previous foster parents will call them and say, we're going on a trip to Disney World. Can we take hypothetical Johnny with us on this trip? And so they keep those connections. And I think that's really important, because for the child, it just says, wow, I have two families now that love me. Not only one family, but now I have two.
I only have about a minute left, and I wanted to end with this, Councilmember Harrison.
Yes, sir.
Do you have children now?
I have a 24-year-old. He'll be 24 actually in July.
So that's a no.
Yes.
Would you be a foster parent now?
You know, it's been something that's been pulling on my heart, but it's a process, and it's something that if you consider being a foster parent, you have to be 100% committed. And so I'm going through that process as we speak. But it's a daily process. But I'm not all the way there yet. But, you know, I would encourage people in Prince George's County and even in the state of Maryland, please consider fostering or adopting here in Prince George's County, because there's children that need your attention. They need your love. They need your commitment. They need your dedication. And furthermore, I just want to thank Mr. Steve Harvey, because Mr. Steve Harvey is actually sponsored a couple kids from the Department of Social Services that are in the foster care system to come out to his mentoring camp, boys mentoring camp, next month. And the county council just recently acknowledged May as National Foster Care Awareness Month, where we are able to give proclamations to Director Gloria Burnett Brown. And for that, we're thankful for everyone that is invested into our youth lives here in Prince George's County. Thank you. I
appreciate your honest answer. And when you get to that point, a friend of mine, Darquita Fletcher, with the Prince George's County Department of Social Services, give her a call. I'm sure she will take your phone call.
Thank you.
I want to thank both of you, Councilmember Sydney Harrison and Darquita Fletcher. I really appreciate you coming in.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, May 16th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection.